excuse me for my voice, but I have never, never seen anything like it.
Hey, now, if we wanted to hit mailboxes, we could let Ralph drive. We're the best
of friends. Moron, your bus is leaving.
Welcome to this Arizona State edition of the On the Road Home podcast. This is Ken Crawford reporting to you, well, from my living room again. I apologize for missing last week. Something odd happened with my audio recorder, and I didn't get all of my thoughts actually on tape, even though I spent a great deal of time on the drive home discussing what I thought of the Bears' somewhat noble performance, I felt, in a very difficult game, and saw a lot of fight from that team. But today we're talking about Arizona State, and the Bears won 47-38. Quick recap of the game. Before we could even tune in and see the game on ESPN, Giorgio Tavecchio had kicked a 48-yard field goal for the Bears to go up 3-0. So when we tuned in, we saw Arizona State with the ball and watched them march down the field all too easily for a touchdown. And frankly, we saw a lot of that today. But the Bears also seemed to be far too easily marching down the field, and they were very much mixing things up in the first quarter. They got a touchdown on E.C. Sofele for an 18-yard gain and a beautiful run, and then a interception by the Bears got on the ball right back, and then they were in scoring position and scored again, up 17-7. After trading touchdowns, the Bears then kicked a field goal to go up 27-14 with about 4 minutes left in the half. But then a really odd set of events happened where the Bears had Arizona State on fourth down just outside of field goal range, and they went for it and threw a deep bomb into the end zone for a touchdown. And then on the kickoff return, the Bears did a fumble that was marginal, and probably should have been overturned and given back to the Bears, but was not, and Arizona State punched the ball in for a 28-27 halftime lead, leaving us all Bear fans a little bit shell-shocked after having been in such a commanding position out of the in the middle of the second quarter. However, the Bears defense did a little bit better in the early second half, holding Arizona State to a field goal on the first possession, and then Cal rattled off two quick touchdowns to get back out in front by 10, 41-31, late in the third quarter. Arizona State gave up got one more touchdown to make it 41-38, and then the Bears kicked two field goals to be up by 9, and were able to eventually run out the clock after desperation attempts by Arizona State for a final score of 47-38. First thing I want to talk about in this game was just how poorly the defense played. Really, this was a game won by the offense, something we really haven't seen this season. We've seen the defense be the dominant entity on the field, and the offense getting just enough done to win the game, often on the ground, pounding it over and over again, and eventually wearing down the opposing defense while the Cal defense was winning in dominating fashion. But today, the Cal defense just didn't have it, and it particularly seemed in the secondary they didn't have it. Osweiler had a pretty good day at 22 of 38, although as the game wore on, I think he did less poorly, or less well, for 270 yards. And it just seemed that Arizona State was very scrappy, that the Cal defense would hold him and hold him, and then a third and 10, they'd get the 12 yards, and I just didn't feel like Arizona State was all that good, but the defense just seemed to be giving up big plays at the wong time, and I was really disappointed. The run defense was pretty good. I mean, they ended up giving up 194 rushing yards to ASU, but it didn't feel like that. There must have been a few big run plays in there. But the 6 for 12 on third down for ASU and 2 for 2 on fourth down for ASU, and a lot of those were long third and fourth downs that they converted, really was kind of frustrating to see the defense just not seeming to have a very good sense of how to play, you know, those longer downs and make sure that, you know, they had to get the 10 yards. And I just didn't feel like Pendergast's scheming today was all that good. You know, really, this is still a pretty darn good unit, and I feel pretty good about it, but this was not their best effort, although they did enough to win the game, so maybe one shouldn't be too picky. But the offense, on the other hand, what a great performance. Maynard ended up 18 for 25, that's 72%, 232 yards. Ran one touchdown in, threw one touchdown, no interceptions, had some great plays. The one that will stand out for a long time was on a third down. He went to start to run for it, and this is the case where Tedford's training and insistence on looking downfield as opposed to running for it paid off, because he extended the play down the line of scrimmage while C.J. Anderson bolted downfield, and he threw a beautiful little touch pass over the top, and Anderson caught it and just streaked down the sideline all the way from where it must have been like a 70-yard touchdown, a 74-yard touchdown it was. And it was just a beautiful, beautiful play by Maynard, probably one of his best plays of the season, both because of the touch on the ball while sprinting, but also the good decision-making there. And I think that was the one thing I just saw from him all day, was good decision-making. There weren't any passes where he said, ooh, well, there's one. Actually, I can't remember that it was, he thought that was a dangerous pass. But mostly he was passing to the right players at the right times. He was making the right decisions on the read options. Actually, one exception, again, where he should have kept the ball on a option play. But overall, just a very strong performance from Maynard. And he's getting better and better. And I personally think he turned the corner a week or two ago. Cal's going to be putting a lot more on his shoulders as we move forward in the bowl game as well. He just really is coming along and is starting to get it. It took him three quarters of a season for that to happen. Maybe we put too much on his shoulders early, but at this point, really, he's been playing very, very well. And really was the key to the game. I mean, E.C. Sofella continues to impress, continues to look better and better every week. C.J. Anderson is continuing to improve. But the game today was won by the passing game, because ASU was not going to let the running game beat them. And despite the fact that Cal ran for 236 yards, I think it was the balance of the passing game that allowed them to rush for so many yards. 232 yards passing, all from Maynard. But another 100-yard game, 143 yards out of E.C. Sofelli, dominant performance. Maynard had 5 runs for 40 yards, and C.J. Anderson looked really good as well with 10 rushes for 48 yards. So just a real impressive performance on offense. I mean, if you look at it, there were very few drives that they didn't score some points. I mean, they were moving the ball down the field on almost all of their possessions, and I think actually it was key to the defense even having the performance that they did. I mean, the order of possessions goes field goal, touchdown, touchdown, one punt, then a touchdown, then a field goal, then that fumble on the kickoff, and then the half. Then going into the second half, we have touchdown, touchdown, field goal, and then the punt at the very end of the game when we were running out the clock. So really, the offense had a total of one punt out of all of their possessions, and everything else was a score. The fumble wasn't even the offense, it was on special teams. Just an impressive, impressive performance on offense. Really, the kind of offense that that we've come to expect out of Tedford and have been so disappointed in the last couple of seasons not to see. And I think, you know, the old coaching staff being back together and coaching up these players, it's starting to bear fruit. And as the season is maturing and developing, those lessons are coming to fruition. And the offense has just been very impressive. The thing is, it's a little hard to say what it was because it wasn't one thing. It was the rollouts. It was, and that's how Tedford, when he's at his best, he beats you. It's not any one thing. He adds it all together. He's got the inside running game and the outside running game, the screen game and the deep game, the dinks and the dunks, and the slants and the over the tops. You know, all of those pieces operating together in unison and forcing the defense to defend everything all the time and never know what's coming and using one play to get them to bite one way and run a different way out of the same formation another time and really force the defense to, you know, be in an impossible situation. And I think as Tedford has gotten to know his quarterback and gotten to know the strength of his team, he keeps putting together better and better game plans up against these opponents. So really just great to see the offense kind of back into that rhythm that we haven't seen for a long time. Now the defense, as I said, not a very impressive performance. Particularly out of the secondary. Some of that might have been the scheming. I mean, they had played a lot of man defense. There were a few runs by the quarterback or whatnot. It was obvious it was man defense downfield because they weren't turning around and coming back at the ball. But at the same time, you saw some pretty strong individual efforts. There were a few very blown plays that touched down on 4th and 10. Catoose did horrible coverage. He was just way off his man. Not quite sure what he was thinking on that play. But there were also some great plays, some great knockdowns by Steve Williams. Mark Anthony had some good plays as well. So I think part of it was they were kind of put in a little bit of a overly difficult situation and weren't quite able to deliver. Pendergast brought a lot of heat today, and it wasn't particularly earlier in the game, was not getting to Osweiler. Later in the game, it was a little bit more successful, and I think that's why Cal was able to pull it out later in the game and really start to force ASU into some more difficult situations. So, so it's not that I think it was more schematically bothering me than the players for the most part. Even though there were a few plays, I just didn't feel good about things. The overall sense was that he really put those corners and the safeties on islands on their various receivers and was bottling up everything in the middle. But then the frustrating part was, then there'd still be these run plays, which are like, how can we be low in the box? How can this defense that's so good at stopping the run, when they're putting the corners and the safeties out on islands, still be giving up some of the run plays that they gave up? That was a lot of rushing yards from ASU for supposedly a really good run defense. On the running side of things, Cameron Marshall had 153 yards on 23 carries. Now he did lose a fumble, and boy, was the turnovers a key part of this game. I'm really, if Cal hadn't had that one fumble late in the second quarter, this would have been a blowout. But on the other hand, if ASU doesn't have that fumble in the third quarter to allow Cal to get back on top of the cadence, it's going to be a lot tighter game, that's for sure. I mean, that's what allowed them to be two scores in front, and pretty much once they got in the third quarter back two scores up, they pretty much dominated the rest of the, not really dominated, but had a controlling end of the game and won it based on that being in that controlling position. So, I don't know, a little bit of a weak defensive performance, and it felt like maybe Pendergast didn't have the best scheme going for the team he was up against today. So, I think that's going to wrap up my commentary on the game, but I do want to go into a few other areas. One is the overall season. Cal ends the season 7-5, 4-5 in conference. Not the the best season ever, but also not a terrible season. And but thinking about what the goals were for this season, I don't know, it felt to me like Tedford met his goals. It was not a great season, but it was a season that the goal was get back to bowl eligibility, get back on track, and show that the team had hope for the future. So what do we have? We have a team that got back to bowl eligibility, and not just 6-6, 7-5. We have a team that seems to be putting some of the pieces back together. You look at who's coming back on offense. Maynard, who showed a lot of improvement towards the end of the season, is coming back. EC and CJ both coming back. Losing two offensive linemen, but keeping three. And some young talent there that seems like it's got potential. Losing Marvin Jones, but also there's a couple young guys there who are injured this year that have potential. So it seems like a lot of good things happening on offense for next year. Defense, losing a lot of players, but so many strong young guys came in and filled in nobly this year that I think it actually might be a lot like how this year developed, that early in the season, because of the youth, there may be some issues, but over time, enough players got enough playing time through injuries and all of that, that I feel like the defense actually will be able to be pretty darn good again next year. So it just feels like next year, not like a Rose Bowl year. I think we're still maybe one more cycle from getting to that place, but to be not stuck so middle of the mud of the middle of the conference, but to maybe lift itself up to be just below the top tier, just below the Oregons and the USCs for next season. On the other hand, I mean, let's look at the muck in the middle of this season and who we match up against. So, obviously, out in front, the three best teams in the conference, USC, Oregon, Stanford. They're the cream of the crop right now, and there's no debating that. But I think you get into the middle, and the way everyone's been playing, there's a big group. We've got Washington, who's 6-5 right now, going into the Apple Cup. We've got Utah, who is ending up 6-6 after losing today to Colorado, and I'll come back to that. Then we've got Arizona State at 6-6, and we've got UCLA, who is at 6-5 right now, but is probably going to be 6-6, all said and done. You know, first of all, of those teams, we beat Arizona State, we beat Utah, we lost to UCLA, we lost to Washington. So, you know, we kind of fit right in the middle of that muck. But I think everyone acknowledges that the game against UCLA was just an egg lay of a game. I mean, that's the game that everyone can look back on the season and say, no excuse for the Bears coming in and playing that horribly in that game. You know, this should have been an 8-4 season. Washington, we were obviously very competitive with them, played them up in Seattle, a close game, wasn't able to pull it out. But as you looked as the season's gone on and the common opponents, there's a lot to say that Cal has played, you know, just as well as they have, in a lot of ways. So, really, you know, I would put Cal, I think you have to put Washington above them because they probably end up at 5-4 as conference where the others don't. Then you get Cal in next spot and pretty much everybody in the South minus, USC is below those four teams in the North. Which brings me back to Utah. The Utah fans, if you look on Ted Miller's blog, other places like that, have been talking trash, you know, for the last couple weeks about how great they are now and blah, 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 blah. And I'd just like to say that's what happens in the Pac-10 and now the Pac-12 when you start to overlook opponents. You lose to a team like Colorado that you think you can't lose to. This is not the Mountain West anymore where there are teams that you can show up with a 20% effort and still win with ease. This is big boy football now, where every team is good enough that if you don't come with a good effort, even the worst team in the conference, you can lose to them when you show up asleep. That's what happened to Cal with UCLA. They should not have lost that game. Cal's a better team than UCLA. But they didn't show up. They played a horrible game, and UCLA really capitalized on the mistakes that Cal made. Well, Utah, there's your... there's your weak performance. And now when we start to line things up and look at who you've beat and all of that, there's no doubt, and there shouldn't be any doubt in anybody's mind, that Cal is the better team than Utah, if we didn't need the dang head-to-head matchup to prove it. it's so frustrating to me to have seen Utah so appreciated in the last week for beating these really not that good teams. And some of them kind of with extenuating circumstances. I mean, it was like that win over UCLA proved they were so awesome when I just saw it as both a bad game played by UCLA, and in the snow and all that, and just, you know, it wasn't that impressive. But this vaulted winning streak was over Oregon State, Arizona, Washington State. They just barely pulled out the overtime win there. And now they lost to Colorado in addition to that vaulted UCLA game. They lost to Arizona State, Cal beat Arizona State. They lost to Colorado, Cal beat Colorado. They barely beat Washington State. Cal creamed Washington State. And by the way, we creamed Utah too. There's just no comparison at this point. You look at how we, Washington situation, there's a lot more back and forth there, uneven scenarios. And they beat us head to head. You have to put them ahead of Cal. So just so frustrating to me to see Utah fans thinking they were something great this year when, in reality, if they had to play either Stanford or Oregon, it would have been quite clear, and they wouldn't even have the record that they have right now. So that brings us to bowls. And if you look at it from a, you know, equitable way, Cal could really end up pretty high up. They could end up in the Holiday Bowl now, particularly with Utah losing and Arizona State at 6-6. So first bowl, Rose goes to Oregon, assuming they went tomorrow over Oregon State and then beat UCLA in the title game. Everyone would expect those two things to happen. Stanford, assuming they can beat Notre Dame, which actually I'm a little bit more nervous about that for Stanford. But assume they do that, they go to the Fiesta. Number three spot now, because USC isn't there, all of a sudden you're already in the muck. You're in the Washington, UCLA, Cal muck. And those are the three teams that are next up. So let's say you pick UCLA because they won the South and they get to go to the Alamo Bowl, as ridiculous as that is. And you know what? Okay, so you put both Washington, UCLA above Cal because they beat them. I understand that, even though it's frustrating as all get out that Cal still laid that egg against UCLA. But we'll leave that on the side for right now. They go to the Alamo Bowl. And then you got to pick between Washington and Cal for the Holiday. Well, Washington was just in the Holiday Bowl last year. It played a great game, beat Nebraska and a comebacker. But, you know, there's a good chance that the Holiday Bowl looks at Washington and Cal and says, we'd kind of like Cal. Cal always travels well to the Holiday Bowl. And then next down you have the Sun. And then you have to get down to the 6-6 teams. So you got to think that they're not going to get leapfrogged by Arizona State or Utah in that mix. And so you really have to think that Sun might be the lowest the Bears go at this point at 7-5, and they could go as high. Depending on how the Sun Bowl, depending on how the Alamo looks at things, they could pick Cal out of that mix. I doubt they do, but chances are either Washington or UCLA goes to the Alamo, actually probably it's in Cal's best interest that they pick UCLA because they won the South. A six and six team. It seems awful hard to do that. But it's probably what they end up doing. And then you have the question is whether, because I'm sure the Holiday Bowl picks Washington, picks UCLA over Cal being the local, more local team if given the shot. And so you get them in the Holiday Bowl. And putting Cal in the Sun. So really Sun looks to be the lowest scenario with the 7-5 Cal team. So very interesting scenario. A lot of muck there. But I really do see a Cal team that's on the rise. I mean, this is a team that has won 4 out of their last 6. Responded well to that losing streak to the tougher teams in Washington, Oregon, and USC. There's the one egg lay to UCLA that's very frustrating. I repeat over and over. But other than that, they beat all the teams that they should have beat. They played competitively with most of the other teams in the conference. And Washington is, I think, the most, you know, is one that he really wished the Bears could have won that. But they played them strong and close. They played Oregon tight for a half, but then things got out of their hands. You know, USC, there was a moment there that you thought maybe they might be able to get back in that game. And then, of course, with Stanford, you know, it was the nail biter down, comes down to the onside kick scenario. So, you know, just a pretty good season, in my opinion, as far as getting back on the right track. You know, I think a bowl game's gonna be big. Bowl games always either leave a very good taste in your mouth or a very sour taste in your mouth. And I sure hope that the Bears come out, play really good football, in their bowl game, whoever their matchup is. And of course we'll find out about that in just over a week. But that's gonna do it for this edition of the On the Road Home podcast. Not sure when Jason and I will get together for another podcast. We didn't get together this week being the Thanksgiving week. After the big game. But I suspect we'll get together at least one more time, before the bowl game. And then probably a season wrap up after the end of the season. So, until then, thanks for listening and go Bears. On the road again, like a band of death, we go down.